Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Today is Thursday, and that means we start off with Taylor Chalstrom.
Hi, welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Today is Tech Thursday, a bi-weekly segment where we cover technological advances in ag. Our guest today is Sat Darshan Khalsa, assistant professional researcher in the Department of Plant Sciences at UC Davis, and we'll be discussing off-ground precision harvest research in almond. Welcome, Sat.
Thanks, Taylor. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here today. Sat, UC Davis has developed and engineered an implement with precision yield monitoring for off-ground harvest in almond. Can you tell me a little bit about why that implement was developed?
Yeah, so we have this opportunity in the industry where they're examining off-ground harvesting for a variety of reasons. And we had thought, how can we parlay this into an opportunity to take a better, closer look at precision agriculture with orchards? So, you know, as I'm sure your listeners know, there's been a lot of advances in the engineering and, you know, the software and hardware to, you know, do yield predictions and yield monitoring, on many annual cropping systems, like in the Midwest. But doing those in orchards it's kind of a whole new frontier for us. So my mentor, Patrick Brown, a distinguished professor at plant sciences at UC Davis, had this great idea to say, let's use this opportunity in off-ground harvesting to see if we can parlay into better understanding precision agriculture in terms of yield monitoring of individual trees in orchards using almond as the model crop. So that was really why this innovation was implemented. And, you know, why we're faced with this opportunity today.
Some of those goals do potentially align with some of the Almond Board's 2025 goals for off-ground harvest. Can you kind of explain how that works, how they might align there?
Yeah, so, I mean, the Almond Board has a 2025 goal to increase the acreage in California of off-ground harvest. And, you know, there's a lot of benefits to off-ground harvesting for food safety, with reduced contact with the produce, with the soils. There's other benefits where you can kind of have more flexibility around soil health practices, like using compost and cover crops. And there's the real practical benefits that, you know, if you're not running a sweeper through your orchard, you know, you're not messing up the drip lines and those types of things and having to go back and fix all the drip lines at the end of the season. So there's a kind of a lot of benefits with off-ground harvest. And this one really aligns with the Almond 2025 goal of doing so, but also, again, providing an opportunity to give us more of this agronomic benefit, this agronomic push into precision agriculture, which we hope will allow growers to have this awareness of what the variability of yields within their field. And then also that would then allow us to better adaptively manage resources like water and nutrients in the future, which in and itself aligns with the other Almond Board goals of around water use and using everything that we plan to use in the orchard. For example, using almond hulls and shells as a soil amendment or other beneficial uses.
So a really important part of this, it's not, you know, off-ground harvest is an important aspect of it, but it's really helping to increase the, for lack of a better term, homogenization of practices in the orchard in general. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, I think it is accurate to say, you know, growers are faced with economic decisions around, you know, applying resources like water and nutrients efficiently and uniformly across orchard blocks. And, you know, frankly, microirrigation has allowed growers to do that, but the systems are engineered also for complete uniformity, which has a lot of benefits. But biologically, we know that trees are going to have different levels of yield throughout the field, and thus have their demands and or the supplies be variable throughout those orchard blocks. So with this project, where we're using a yield monitor on an off-ground harvester, we're really pushing the envelope to better understand what that yield variability is. And then at the same time, hopefully be bringing awareness to growers about that, what that yield variability is and how we can think about managing it in the future.
We're gonna be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Agromayor Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromayor has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Root Pack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromayor can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Root Pack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
Don't let your soils become tainted and unproductive from excess salts. Take care of your crops while caring for your soil. Cation X5 Plus by AgroPlanté is a soil conditioner meant to maximize water penetration by combating harmful salts in the soil, which can injure your crops and bottom line. Cation X5 Plus also corrects sulfur and calcium plant deficiencies. AgroPlanté wants to help you grow your crop. Contact us today to find out more at 559-498-0388 or visit us at www.agroplanté.com.
The California Walnut Board and Commission provides value to the California walnut industry by working together with growers and handlers to advance the industry. Together, the California Walnut Board and Commission are helping to protect, develop, and grow California walnuts domestically and internationally. The California Walnut Board provides funding and strategic direction on walnut production and post-harvest research designed to help support the industry and promote California walnuts. To learn more, visit our website at walnuts.org. Together we grow.
Hi, we're back talking with Sat Darshan Khalsa, Assistant Professional Researcher in the Department of Plant Sciences at UC Davis. Sat, I want to talk a little bit about the implement itself because I actually was afforded the opportunity to see it in person a little while ago, and it was really interesting to see. Can you tell me a little bit about how that implement attaches to the off-ground harvester was developed and what some of the specific features are of that?
Yeah, first and foremost, I do want to acknowledge, I've acknowledged Patrick Brown, of course, but also our colleagues in biological and agricultural engineering, Dennis and Dr. Stavros and Dr. Chen put in many, many hours to develop a mechanism that when attached to the harvester can take the measurement from those individual trees and then drop those nuts in the row within a windrow in the field. So the idea being is as the off-ground harvester moves from tree to tree in the field, we're shaking those trees and catching those nuts. And then as they're being transported on the belt, it goes into a weigh bin, which will take that weight for that individual tree along with a timestamp. And then there's a trap door that opens up and drops those nuts onto the ground. Into a windrow, which can then effectively be picked up after, you know, some drying and conditioning as needed for your harvest. So in those sense, we're still achieving the goal of limiting the pass of sweeping potentially, but at the same time, we're actually getting those individual weights of those yield, those trees as we go, as the implement moves through the field. So we partnered with Eric Nielsen Enterprises, who is a fantastic collaborator, as well as OMC, Orchard Machinery Corporation, and our colleagues in bio and ag engineering attached this yield monitor to their existing machinery. So we're working with machines that already exist and are being used in prunes and pistachios, but we outfitted it with a yield monitor, which in our view is a very novel approach to building off the benefits of off-ground harvest.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but this particular implement, the yield monitor, this is kind of the first of its kind. No one else is doing this kind of research. UC Davis is at the forefront of that.
Yeah, to our knowledge, we are at the forefront of this, both for the on the academic side, but also, you know, commercially. But what we want to do is, you know, we're not in the business of necessarily making a brand new machine, right? What we want to do is we want to partner with existing companies that are doing custom harvests and other types of operations in orchards for growers, and then also, you know, develop something that could fit with their system. And this was our first year, and we had our first prototype out there, and we ended up harvesting thousands of trees within an orchard and getting individual trees on weights on all those trees. And now we're in the process of starting to map that out for our grower collaborator and being able to show them where the variability in the field is.
In terms of off-ground harvest, it's this practice that's been being promoted in the industry for quite a while now, and various methods have been used over the years. You know, can you tell me what aspects of off-ground harvest this particular research is looking to improve upon?
Yeah, so there's kind of two pieces. Obviously, there is the challenge that with off-ground harvesting, you're going to probably likely the shakers and catch frames are going to be moving slower than traditionally a shaker would. So we're trying to get a better understanding of how we can do off-ground harvest in almond orchards. What are the constraints, the sizes of the trees, the height of the trunk, moving from tree to tree? And these are sort of some practical matters that we're going to be observing, not only as a UC research, but in partnership with our growers and our manufacturing partners who are in the field with us, with their scientists and engineers as well. So we're going to get a better understanding of how to implement off-ground harvest and then taking these precision measurements along the way. So that in itself is an advance. The other advancing that I think we're going to be able to do and where we're going to also be improving upon is there's a whole host of different remote sensing tools available to the industry, both in research form that we're working on, but also in commercial form, where you can get lots of maps and information about the variability within your fields. But those are often sensing components within the field, like leaf chlorophyll content, evapotranspiration off the canopy, and other measurements, spectral measurements. And we have a lot of colleagues who are working on correlating those values, which are readily available and abundant through UAVs, drones, and satellite imagery. So working on a lot of different scales. But the benefit of what we really have is the actual agronomic output of the individual trees. So when we know that last year in a field, what the individual trees' yields were, and we can pixelate that, that becomes the dependent variable, if you will, yield. So we can better then think about how remote sensing tools that can be implemented throughout the season can then be used to predict yield, and as well as adaptively manage the field with our nitrogen, nutrient, and water resources to really improve upon precision and efficiencies all around. And hopefully also finding out ways to manage parts of ranches that might be underperforming and managing them to improve yields for growers. And one other small piece to think about, Taylor, on a practical matter, is if we are sort of progressing with off-ground harvest, catching nuts and placing them in row, we're also looking at streamlining harvest operations within that regard, where if we're not having to spend as much time and resources for sweeping and blowing within orchards, then we can also be sort of hopefully freeing up those, skilled labor to be doing other things around harvest time, which I think we all know is a really hectic time of the year. So there are sort of lots of opportunities to start thinking about how to integrate off-ground harvesting within orchards and ranches to kind of think about different outcomes and goals that might be of interest to the growers.
Are there any updates on how this research project is going up to this point?
Yeah, so at this research project, we've established three different ranches in the Central Valley. One is in Yolo County and the other is in Solano County. And then we have one down in Madera County as well. The orchards in Yolo County and Madera are nonpareil with pollinizers, and the Solano County ranch is 100% independence planted. So we're really trying to target kind of a lot of the varieties that growers are working with. So that's a lot of progress that we've made in this last year with those collaborations. We've also, in one of the ranches, we were able to individually harvest thousands of trees within a block. So we have that initial outcome. And then in other ranches, we were able to do a lot of different remote sensing measurements at the same time where we were doing other types of tree level measurements, like estimating the number of flowers within the tree, better understanding fruit set, And then also looking at leaf nutrients and water status within those trees. So in all our different ranches, we have the whole blocks where we're going to be monitoring for yield. But within those blocks, we also have what we call focus data trees, where we're going to be collecting more data on those individual trees, again, to try to uncover what are the underlying drivers of yield at the tree scale, and then hopefully understanding what those drivers are in partnership with our colleagues who are doing remote sensing. We can then start better understanding what are the drivers of yields, and then ultimately start predicting what the yields are going to be within the field. And that early season prediction is really what growers are going to need to adaptively manage their resources in the future. So we've completed our first year, and we have two more years to go, and we're really excited with the direction of this research.
I was fortunate enough to be able to witness a demonstration of the implement in person. It looks really cool, seems really promising. The UC Davis team did a really good job engineering that. And to all of our listeners, be expecting an article in the November edition of West Coast Nut about this exact topic. We really look forward to some more updates on this research in the future. So thank you for coming on today and talking about it.
Oh, thanks, Taylor. Thanks for having me. And we look forward to hearing your thoughts from your listeners. Always like value the feedback.
Of course. This is Taylor with My Ag Life signing off.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Here's your news for today. House Appropriations Committee Chair Rosa DeLauro this week introduced the Fresh Produce Procurement Reform Act. The Connecticut Democrat says the legislation will increase and improve the Department of Agriculture's procurement of fresh fruits and vegetables. The bill would require USDA to partner with growers, distributors, and food hubs to provide fresh, U.S.-grown fruits and vegetables to community organizations like schools, food pantries, and youth organizations, while prioritizing socially disadvantaged farmers and entities and regional food inequities. The public will have a brief window to comment on proposed rulemaking regarding labeled of cultured cell-based meat and poultry products, Rod Bain reports.
2018, a public meeting held by the Food and Drug Administration and the Agriculture Department gained input on the potential government oversight of culture cell-derived meat, poultry, and seafood products. As Matthew Michael of USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service recalls.
Interestingly, at that public meeting, most of the comments were on labeling. That was the real interest of consumers and regulated industry and advocacy groups in academia. They really wanted to talk about how these products will be labeled, whether the labeling will reveal that they were produced using this technology, what they'll be called, etc.
USDA and FDA the following year entered into an oversight agreement.
Under the agreement, we'll share jurisdiction over their production and harvest and labeling. And in that agreement, we said we would establish joint principles for labeling.
So while the Food and Drug Administration is engaging in a public comment process on labeling of seafood products developed by cell culture technology,
we've issued our advance notice of proposed rulemaking for labeling of meat and poultry products
through similar technologies. Michael says through the proposed rulemaking notice, stakeholders and citizens now have opportunity to comment on the question of labeling.
This is a new technology, and we'd really like all the information we could get in order to develop regulations for the labeling of these products.
Michael Hope's comment will include the following subjects.
Consumer perception of these labels, consumer perception of the products, how they should be labeled in light of how similar they are to traditional products in regard to their taste, their appearance, their texture, any kind of information on the economics of this labeling, whether certain types of names or labels would be beneficial to industry or to consumers.
And he adds, with this public comment period,
we are only requesting comment on how these products should be labeled. We plan to inspect their production the same way we inspect other processed products. We don't intend to issue any new regulations regarding the inspection of these products for safety.
Comments are now being accepted through November 2nd, with more details about the proposed rulemaking and how to submit comments available at www.fsis.usda.gov.
They can go to the FSIS webpage and find the rule there under the policy section. And then we have a link to submitting comments electronically. They could also go directly to that link, which is regulations.gov, and submit comments.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
A new report from Reuters claims the Environmental Protection Agency will propose cuts to blending requirements under the Renewable Fuel Standard. A document seen by Reuters reporters contained proposed cuts that would reduce blending mandates for 2020 to about 17.1 billion gallons and 18.6 billion gallons for 2021. Those levels are significantly lower than the 20.1 billion gallons finalized for 2020 before the pandemic. EPA is setting the 2020 and 2021 mandates retroactively and would set 2022 at about 20.8 billion gallons. Reuters suspects ethanol would take the biggest hit, dropping from 15 billion gallons to about 12.5 billion gallons in 2020, 13.5 billion in 2021, and 14.1 in 2022. Some farmers are increasingly concerned about rapidly rising costs and smaller supplies for the inputs they need to produce a crop. Gary Crawford has more.
Yes, indeed, these are some good times for some producers. Commodity prices are high, demand is huge. However,
there is getting to be growing concern on the input side.
Inputs. Scott Gerlt is economist for the American Soybean Association, telling an Outlook Forum put on this week by AgriPulse that fertilizer prices tend to move up when commodity prices go up. And indeed,
for things like DAP, we're seeing about a doubling of the price from a year ago. And there's a few other issues going on. There's higher transportation costs. Hurricane Ida has shut down some of the ports for bringing it in, as well as some of the fertilizer plants.
And trade issues such as import duties are limiting the amount of phosphates and other fertilizers coming into the country.
But we're also hearing from our producers quite a bit of concern about things other than fertilizer as well, chemicals, seeds.
USDA is estimating production expenses this year will be 7% higher than 2020 and higher still in 2022, with major increases expected for the three Fs, fertilizers, feed, and most of all, fuel. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Bayer this week announced it will expand its vegetable seed offerings under the Bayer umbrella to include organically produced seed. The launch will focus on certified organic production in three key crops for the greenhouse and glasshouse market, including tomato, sweet pepper, and cucumber. These will be followed by tomato rootstock varieties in 2023. Bayer's expanded portfolio is in direct response to increased customer need for high-quality organic seed. Global consumer demand for certified organic product continues to grow and is predicted to drive market expansion. Outreach continues to grow regarding education of farm safety and health to both ag producers and the general public. Rod Bain joins us once again.
Farm safety yields results, the theme of this year's National Farm Safety and Health Week. And there are several ways the word about farm safety and health prevention and protection are being cultivated, both for those in agriculture and all of us in general. The National Education Center for Agricultural Safety, the parent organization of National Farm Safety and Health Week, have public service videos available at their website on specific topics ranging from rural road safety and anhydrous ammonia exposure.
If I would have completely ran out of breath, I don't know if I'd be standing here today. That fog was so heavy.
To fatigue and sun safety.
We see a lot of skin cancers, especially on outdoor workers, so I always encourage to protect their necks and ears. Forearms especially, we see a lot of skin cancers on the hands and forearms.
The National Education Center for Ag Safety's website, www.necasag.org/National Farm Safety and Health Week is also the location for a series of webinars conducted during National Farm Safety and Health Week. Also available at the website is links to various resources, publications, and videos available from partnering farm safety and health organizations, agribusinesses, and ag policy groups, and cooperative extension. One example, a video on cattle handling safety from the Southwest Center for Agricultural Health, Injury Prevention, and Education, featuring renowned veterinarian and author Temple Grandin.
Cattle that are all agitated and excited are cattle that are going to be more dangerous to handle. We need to work on making sure they don't get excited in the first place.
An important way to cultivate the themes of farm safety and health is personal communication. It can come through person-to-person dialogue, like farmer-to-farmer or farmer-to-non-farmer neighbor. Or as Scott Heiberger of the National Farm Medicine Center adds, it can also come from personal experience and sharing that with others, such as through his organization's Telling the Story project.
The project tells first-person accounts of injury situations, close calls, but far from being embarrassed, they want other farmers and farm families to learn from their situation so that the same thing doesn't happen to them.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
That's our news for today. We will be right back.
Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Welcome back. At the recent webinar on sustainable agriculture, which was hosted by AgriPulse, Deputy Secretary of Agriculture Dr. Jewel Bronaugh gave some thoughts on the government agenda and the UN Food Summit, which happens today, September 23rd, in New York.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity to participate in the forum today. As Deputy Secretary of USDA, I've recently had the honor of representing the United States at the UN Food Systems pre-summit ministerial in Rome in mid-July. I could not pass up the opportunity to lead the delegation. It has been a year plus of a global pandemic that has devastated health, food security, and economic prosperity. Significant climate change is affecting every corner of the earth, and we just witness over and over the effects of conflict and deepening food insecurity. It is time for concerted collaborative action, and we must act with urgency. Through the UN Food Systems Summit, we've had an opportunity to collectively refocus the world's attention on ending hunger and poverty and building more sustainable, equitable, and resilient food systems. You know, the road to recovery from COVID-19 offers us an opportunity to build forward better and make real progress towards achieving the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development by deepening resilience to future shocks and promoting sustainable livelihoods that conserve nature and leave no one behind. The United States is committed to a summit that leverages this moment and lives up to the potential. Leading up to the summit, we have been working with other countries and delegates in Rome to build coalitions and consensus around shared priorities. For the United States, these priorities include hunger and nutrition. We all recognize that global food insecurity was at unacceptable levels even before the pandemic, which is why the United States is committed to a food system summit that puts addressing hunger, poverty, and malnutrition and their causes at the center of discussion for global action. I've been proud to highlight that our international colleagues all over the world, and to our international colleagues, that the United States is the largest provider of international agricultural, economic development, and humanitarian food assistance, including assistance for school meals. From experience, we know that school feeding programs are one key to reducing hunger, increasing educational opportunities, and promoting gender equity worldwide. That's why the United States, led by USDA, is joining and promoting the Global School Meals Coalition. The coalition will formally launch at the summit in September with an ambitious goal of expanding school feeding programs to make nutritious meals available for all children by 2030. Another priority is climate change. And for the United States and many other countries, it means strategic investments in agricultural innovation, research, and development. Such investments are critical for accelerating progress on climate goals and all the sustainable development goals. At the pre-summit, we were hard at work encouraging other countries to join us in the Agricultural Innovation Mission for Climate, which the United States is preparing to launch in partnership with the United Arab Emirates at the COP26 in November. AIM for Climate has the goal of increasing and accelerating global innovation, research and development in agriculture and food systems in support of climate action. AIM for Climate was announced at President Biden's Leaders Summit on Climate earlier this year with support from Australia, Brazil, Denmark, Israel, Singapore, Uruguay, and the endorsement of the United Kingdom's COP26 presidency. At the pre-summit, we were pleased to continue advancing the initiative towards launch by announcing additional support for AIM for Climate from Burkina Faso, Colombia, Ghana, Honduras, Hungary, the Republic of Korea, Mexico, Philippines, Ukraine, and Vietnam. The United States looks forward to engaging our partner nations in this work, and we encourage all to join us on this journey as we create this historic, one-of-a-kind initiative. Another key action to advance progress on our climate goals and many of the sustainable development goals is reducing food loss and waste. In fact, it is difficult to see how we could achieve meaningful transformation to more sustainable food systems without reducing food loss and waste. That is why the United States strongly supports the creation of a Food is Never Waste Coalition and looks forward to joining with the Solution Cluster leadership and the early partner countries of Brazil, Indonesia, and Italy to build a coalition for launch at the summit. U.S. support for this coalition is in line with our commitment to not only reduce food loss and waste domestically, but to support capacity building efforts that will help achieve this goal internationally as well. And finally, another key priority is inclusion and equity. Within the U.S. government, we are aligning our efforts to deliver improved nutrition for the most vulnerable, empower youth and women for greater inclusivity, and step up investments in agricultural innovation and rural infrastructure to significantly improve the sustainability and resilience of food systems. Simply put, realizing the goals of the Food Systems Summit will require strengthening capacity of all participants in food and agriculture systems, particularly those in marginalized communities, women, youth, and indigenous people. In preparing for the summit, the United States hosted three national food systems dialogues, allowing diverse stakeholders to discuss challenges, opportunities, and pathways forward. I was able to present some of the results of these dialogues at the pre-summit and look forward to continuing and expanding these critical conversations both at home and worldwide. In addition, we remain focused on some fundamental principles that underpin these priorities, including leading with science and innovation, enabling trade and rural infrastructure and investment. Following the pre-summit, we found we needed to further elevate sustainable productivity growth as a strategic action priority at the summit and coalesce action for productivity growth that advances social, economic, and environmental objectives. Given tightening natural resource constraints, raising the productivity of existing natural resources is a viable option to meet food security needs current and future generations. Only through productivity growth can we meet the world's growing nutrition needs without bankrupting farmers, consumers, and nature. The United States is initiating formation of a coalition of action on sustainable productivity growth for food security and resource conservation. The objective of this coalition is to accelerate the transition to more sustainable food systems through agricultural productivity growth that optimizes agricultural sustainability across social, economic, and environmental dimensions. This coalition will advance a holistic approach to productivity growth that considers impacts and trade-offs among multiple objectives. So the UN Food Systems Summit is quickly approaching on September 23rd. I look forward to the US's engagement in the summit to bring the world's attention to shared goals and to act with urgency for the health of the planet and well-being of current and future generations. The Food Systems Summit provides a valuable opportunity to bring diverse stakeholders together and catalyze action to end global hunger and ensure inclusive and equitable access to safe, nutritious, and affordable food. The United States is committed to leveraging the power of well-functioning markets at the local and international levels to bolster food security and sustainable food systems by expanding income opportunities, stabilizing food supply, reducing and stabilizing food prices, reducing food loss and waste, and improving dietary diversity and nutrition. Most importantly, the Food Systems Summit gives us the opportunity to face our shared challenges together and to move forward together. None of us alone can address the enormity of these global challenges. We are stronger together, and together we can shape the future of food systems for the better of everyone. Thank you all for your support and your commitment as we continue to work together to address these challenges. And I look forward to working with everyone. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today, Sarah.
That's our show for today. If there's a topic you'd like to hear more about, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. From the JCS Marketing Team, thanks for listening.